Okay, we can discuss the machzorim later. Now that it's 1 o'clock Eastern time, okay, I want to welcome everybody. Achron Achron Chavi, part five, the last of our series on forgotten books. I think we should come up with more forgotten books and give Yosef some extra homework to do on the stuff that he hasn't covered. Because I did suggest one of, it was originally a four-part series, but then I insisted he discuss certain things, so we had to increase it to five parts. So maybe if you want to increase it to 10 parts, come up with all the forgotten classics you have. And then at some point we can continue. But okay, time to get started. RCA, Rabbinical Council of America, Sidurim. I don't know how many people here have even seen it. It's like forgotten. It never was remembered. But I guess that's what you're going to talk about. Okay, Bakasha.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman. And yeah, actually there have been three editions of the RCA Siddur, and we're going to talk about the
recent one that just came out that nobody uses.
Yeah, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about that one, too, because although I don't even know if it was around enough to be forgotten, but it certainly has not made it into usage. But I think it's really an interesting sitter, so we're gonna discuss that. Let me start off.
I wanted to tell Rabbi Lindell that your article on Avram Davidson inspired me to write a poem which you'll find in Times of Israel.
Oh, I saw it, actually. I have Google send me alerts when my name is mentioned. So I saw your poem. Yeah.
Did you like the poem?
I did, yeah. Thank you.
An amazing guy, this Avram Davidson. I'd never heard of him.
Yeah, really, really interesting. I'd be happy to talk a few more about him at a different time. But yes, very interesting figure. I really enjoyed researching and writing that article. I'm sharing the source sheet here. So let's begin, and as I've been doing is not with the RCA Siddur, but actually somewhere else, and we'll weave our way back to the RCA Siddur soon. So in June 12th, 1945, 200 rabbis associated with the Agudas HaRabbanim, which is an Orthodox rabbinical group in America, they gathered at the Hotel McAlpin in New York City. They excommunicated Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan, the founder of Reconstructionist Judaism. And in fact, not only did they excommunicate him, but Rabbi Joseph Ralbag, one of the attendees who is well known for being the head of the Triangle K Hashgacha, that's a whole other story, he actually burned Mordechai Kaplan's Siddur in front of everyone. And I put on the source sheet in source number one, you can see the New York Times article about this excommunication and the burning of the Siddur, which I won't go into in depth, but it certainly made the news. It was a big deal. You don't have too many other examples in America of excommunications or of burnings of Jewish books, which is good that we don't have too many examples of that, honestly. I mean, Rabbi Norman Lamb, for example, was obviously upset with Mordechai Kaplan as well, like many Orthodox people were, but I don't know if he was active at the time, but writing about it later, he did not support the burning of the Siddur. He felt that was inappropriate. But anyway, leaving that aside for a moment, Mordechai Kaplan was certainly no stranger to controversy. Although he began as an Orthodox rabbi, he had smicha from Jewish Theological Seminary, and then he went to get additional smicha from Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Reines in Europe. He was also the founding rabbi of the Jewish Center, an important modern Orthodox synagogue. But from 1920, he was already questioning the tenets of halacha and the foundations of Jewish belief in very strong terms. But his siddur was not published until 1945. And that really seems to be like the last straw. That sort of between 1920 and 1945, the Orthodox community still felt that maybe he was one of theirs. And it wasn't until he published the Siddur that people really decided in very strong terms that his break from Orthodoxy was complete. Now, to be sure, this was a very non-traditional Siddur. And I think part of what made people so upset about it is because it seems traditional a little bit, and then when you open it and look just a little bit more carefully, it's really not. So like you'll have Shema, and you'll have the first and third paragraphs of Shema. But the second paragraph is not there. The one that talks about reward and punishment. Like if you keep the Torah, you'll be rewarded. If you don't keep the Torah, you'll be punished. And the rain will come if you do good, and the rain will not come if you don't do good. And that is a very, and Kaplan, based on his theology, felt that rain is a natural process. It's not supernatural. So that he didn't feel that was right. So he omitted that part of Shema. In the second bracha of Shmona Esrei, we have the bracha of Mechal Kel Chaim, and it talks about Mechaye Hamesim, that God revives, resuscitates the dead. So he doesn't like that either. So instead, he changes the end of the bracha. Instead of Mechaye Hamesim, that Hashem revives the dead, it's Zocher Yitzurav L'Chaim Barachamim, which is based on the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Tfilot, that Hashem remembers his creations for life with mercy. Asher Barachar Banu Mikol Ha'amim, another very important part of our Tfilot, that God chose us from all the nations. He didn't like that either, that the Jewish people were chosen did not fit with his theology. He changed it to Asher Karavnu L'Avodasecha, that he brought us forth to his service, to your service. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many, many other changes. Why am I telling you all this? I'm telling you that because a sitter, I think, in some ways, is what defines, it defines many aspects of theology and Judaism, what defines many aspects of where you stand and where you stake out your position on the spectrum, on the denominational spectrum in America. And that's, I think, why Mordechai Kaplan's sitter, in the end of the day, is what got him banned, and his earlier writings did not. Yeah. As Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has written, we do not analyze our faith, we pray it. And thus, for better or for worse, the sitter also then can sometimes become an arena on which we fight theological battles. So when we have questions like, do we say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut? It becomes a big deal, because it's a bigger question than just the words of Hallel, in a way. It's, do we recognize the role the state of Israel has played, and the modern state of Israel, and what religious meaning do we attribute to that? So we can see how the sitter really does take that really important place in staking out that position of how aware a person is, aware a group is on the denominational spectrum, where they are theologically, what's their hashkafa. So if the Reconstructionist movement was staking out its position with a sitter in 1945, we have other groups doing the same thing. Already from 1895, the Reform Movement published the Union Prayer Book. And the Union Prayer Book also states a very clear theological position. This is a book that opens from left to right, like an English book, not right to left, like a Hebrew book. Shema is truncated. Shmona Esrei is just a couple of brachos. There's only one Kaddish. English translations are usually offered in place of the Hebrew. There's very little Hebrew in the Siddur at all. And new English readings are added. And this Siddur was pushed by many Reform rabbis in their synagogues to try to unify the Reform movement around one liturgy. So all Reform synagogues, in theory, would be saying the same things, and you would walk into one Reform synagogue or a second Reform synagogue, and the liturgy would be similar. Now, the conservative movement started to do this. In 1946, for example, they published a sitter, the Silverman Sitter, that it was a largely traditional sitter, probably responding actually in some way to Mordechai Kaplan's sitter. He actually arose out of the conservative movement himself, in many ways, because he was teaching at the Jewish Theological Seminary, and he was very involved with that, as well as being involved with Orthodoxy. And the conservative sitter was largely traditional, but it did take away some things, like they took out the idea that we should return and sacrifice karbanot in the Beit HaMikdash again in the Messianic era, and they didn't want, you know, they didn't feel that was something that they wanted to pray for. So again, as that sitter expanded and that sitter became sort of a standard issue in conservative synagogues, the conservative movement coalesced and unified around that liturgy. So coming back now to where we want to be for this class is, what do you do in Orthodox congregations around this time? So obviously you don't want to change the text of the sitter, but maybe you still want a standard sitter, because you have people coming in. We talked about this a little bit last time about what Herman Woke said, about how you're coming into shul, you take some sitter, the Hebrew doesn't make sense, the translation doesn't make any sense. So you have a lot of people talking. Maybe you have American-born Jews who don't have the same Jewish education. They don't really know what's going on. And everyone just scattershot, just using their own edition of the sitter they picked up here and there, maybe is not going to be so good. And maybe it's going to make it harder for people to follow along in shul. So it kind of makes sense that you would want some kind of standardized sitter. And this is, I think, where the RCA comes in. And the Rabbinical Council of America, a very important modern Orthodox rabbinical group. So they decide to make a sitter. Now, what I have here as source number two is actually not text from their original sitter, which we're about to talk about in a moment, but actually their preface to the second edition of the sitter, which we're going to talk about second. But I want to read this paragraph in Source 2 just because it gives a sense of what the RCA was trying to do when they originally decided to make a sitter. And this is in the, when they originally decided to make a sitter was actually in the 1940s. And they say, almost three decades ago, the Rabbinical Council of America issued its first authorized sitter. It was not a dearth of prayer books that motivated its publication, but rather a plethora of siddurim. Most of them had been reprinted from Eastern European editions and had inaccuracies in the Hebrew text, inelegant translations, and inadequate rubrics, if at all, and were not very pleasing to the eye. Such siddurim may have been acceptable to the immigrant generation, but not to the emergent generation of American-born Jews. To meet the needs of increasing numbers of members of their own congregations, the Rabbinical Council of America undertook a siddur project. So the RCA wants to put itself on the map. And the RCA wants to try to unify at least its congregations, which might loosely be described as modern Orthodox, under the same umbrella. And by, and to do so, they want to have a standard. They want to have a standard sitter. It would be something like just like Reform and Conservative congregations were trying to standardize the services in synagogue by having their own sitter. The RCA says, let's do the same thing for our member congregations. Let's put the RCA on the map. Now, as you'll see in source number three, the sitter, which I have a little picture of here, was not published until 1960. But the year the RCA decided to prepare a sitter was 1944. Now, this is a year before Mordechai Kaplan's sitter. This is 2 years before the Silverman Conservative sitter. So this was the time when a lot of people were thinking about this idea of having a standardized sitter. The RCA is thinking about it at the same time. So they intended, I think, to publish it within a couple of years. But it didn't happen. So as I said, Mordechai Kaplan published his in 1945 and staked out his position. You have Morris Silverman in 1946 and the conservative movement, sitter. Then you still have no RCA Orthodox sitter. There were press releases that kept coming out and coming out. In 1953, there was a press release that said the sitter is practically complete. It's almost done. But it was not published until 1960, and 16 years had elapsed. In those 16 years in which the RCA sitter was not published, what ended up happening, as we talked about last time, is Philip Birnbaum published his sitter in 1949. And that sitter more or less cornered the Orthodox market. I'm not saying there weren't other siddurim available, but that was kind of became a standard sitter that was used widely in Orthodox congregations. And the RCA sitter didn't really have a chance because it ended up coming out so much after that other sitter. So the editor and translator of the RCA Sitter was Rabbi Dr. David DeSola Poole, who I have over here, his picture. He was the rabbi of She'erith Israel. That's the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue on the Upper West Side, one of the oldest congregations in America. And he also, I mean, he was Sephardic, and he was the translator of the Spanish-Portuguese Sitter and the Sephardic Sitter, which was widely used in many congregations. And I think that's why the RCA said, let's have Rabbi DeSola Poole also translate this new RCA Sitter. He was, you know, an important member of the RCA as well, and it seemed like a good fit. The only problem is he was very busy. It took him a long time. He wasn't as familiar with the Ashkenazi Nusach. There were all sorts of other, you know, different committees and decisions and like who was going to be the publisher and everything and raising the funding. And there were just the historians who have looked at it just have found that there were numerous reasons for delay, but not least is the fact that Rabbi DeSola Poole simply just didn't do the work. He just sort of sat on it for a long time and didn't finish it. So by the time it's finished, it kind of doesn't have as much of a chance of making the impact that maybe they thought it would make. But let's just, and by the way, I have the picture, but here is also the sitter itself. I have a copy here. You can see it's black with gold lettering, which is important because we're going to see that every RCA sitter follows the same model going forward. And I put over here in source number three, I put here just a sample page from this 1960 RCA sitter so you can sort of get a sense of what it's like. And you'll notice a number of features. You'll notice the layout is nice. It's easy to follow. It's got the Hebrew, it's got the English, the font is nice, the letters are big. It doesn't have much commentary, I will say that much. It has also transliterations for those who can't read Hebrew, and there are some English readings in the back as well. One other really interesting thing about it is there's no weekday davening. which I think is something that would not go over well, let's say, in an Orthodox sitter, certainly 20 years later. But I think the assumption is that a lot of congregants in these synagogues are not coming to shul during the week, and this is more of a Shabbos sitter. If you look here at the translation that Dr. Poole prepared, you will notice that it is very poetic, very similar to what we talked about in our third class. Not only does he kind of follow the style of the Adler Machzer here, but he even uses some of the translations from the Adler Machzer. So like a lot of the translations we talked about from Nina Solomon, the British poet, Israel Zangwill, the cultural Zionist and literary and novelist from England, a lot of those translations, like for the Hoshanos, are still there in this RCA sitter. These old translations from the early 20th century, very poetic. We talked about how they were much more interested in preserving the poetry than in preserving the literal meaning. So if you look over here just very quickly at Kael Adon, for example, that Dr. Poole translated, you see, again, a lot of attention to the poetry of the sitter. So you'll notice that if Kael Adon is a Hebrew acrostic going by the Aleph Bet, so in English he goes by A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? So he follows the same acrostic, and that, of course, is going to lead to a somewhat less literal translation. I mean, it's a pretty translation. I read you just a few lines. He's got like, Almighty is God above over all of his works. Blessed ye by the breath of each soul. Creation is filled with his goodness and might. Deep knowledge and wisdom engird him around. It's sort of this very lofty, very fancy English translation that was definitely in vogue at the time. And the idea, again, was to make a very beautiful sitter. The idea was to make something that congregants can really look at and say, like, this is a sitter that enhances decorum in shul. This is something where I can stand here and I can follow the service. It's clear enough that I know they're going to call the page numbers. We're all going to have the same sitter. I can follow what's going on. I have a translation that I can read and enjoy and feel spiritually uplifted by the translation. And this is very much speaks to its time. This is very much what congregants, that people felt, at least the congregants, wanted and needed. Something different than those old European siddurim that we looked at last time, or translations of old European editions where the translation was poor, the directions were in Yiddish, or sometimes in Yiddish, sometimes in Hebrew, sometimes very unclear, often things were omitted. Here's a sitter, everything's misudar, everything's in order, and things are easier to follow. So that was the basic idea of the 1960 RCA sitter. I have here in the next source, I did just out of for interest to put some of the introduction that Rabbi Poole wrote. And the main thing I want you to get from this is not what he's saying, but just the way he's saying it, this very lofty, fancy style of writing. He's got like the sitter, as the Jewish prayer book is called in Hebrew, bears the deep impress of the Jewish faith. It is marked by an all-pervading and radiant optimism. It greets each newborn day with the ringing assertion, the soul with which God has endowed man is pure. It maintains an unyielding faith in the basic goodness of the human soul. A somber note is seldom heard. So this is very lofty, very fancy language that he's writing. Very much speaks to the time when it was written. He says a little bit here at the end about the translation. He says that the English rendition often essays to suggest poetic forms of the Hebrew text and catch the vivid nuances flashing from the original many-faceted biblical allusions, which is a difficult sentence, but if you parse it, I think what he's saying is that I'm going to write a very poetic translation because he believes that the Hebrew itself is very poetic, so the English translation should reflect the poetry, which is a lot of what we talked about in that third class about the Adler Machzer. I should also mention, very important actually, that Rabbi Dr. Charles Chevelle was the head of the Sitter Committee. He was an important rabbi and scholar at the time. He's well known for his translation of the Ramban's commentary on the Torah, Nachmanides. Now, Rav Soloveitchik is also prominently mentioned at the beginning of the Sitter on the first page as the chairman of the Halacha Committee. So it has his backing, it has his support. This is the RCA, he was the poseg for the RCA. They ask him difficult questions. And this sitter is also part of that, and associated with the Rav. Now, we noted already in the third class, because we were talking about this criticism of the poetic translation, that, and we noticed in the fourth class as well, so we're kind of going back to all these things, that there was a lot of criticism of the RCA sitter when it was published in 1960. The most important criticism is the one we talked about last time and the time before that, Philip Birnbaum, wrote this article on Hadoar, which is a Hebrew publication, where he said that I really don't like this translation. He's very upset with Israel Zangwill's translations. He feels they're not literal, feels they make mistakes. They add words that are not there. They take out things that should be in there. He's also upset with Dr. Poole's translation. One particular word that really upset Birnbaum and is talked about at length in his review and all the responses to the review and the back and forth is in Brich Shemei, which is the Aramaic tefillah from the Zohar that we say right before taking out the Torah. And it uses the word Bar Elohim, which Birnbaum feels should be translated as angel, that and not literally as Bar Elohim would literally, I suppose, be son of God. And Birnbaum feels that, and it's saying we don't rely on a Bar Elohim, we rely only on God. So Birnbaum says that should be, we don't rely on an angel, we rely only on God. But it seems that what Poole translated, he translated as son of God, and it seems like, at least from Dr. Chevelle's response to Birnbaum, that what he was trying to convey is that this is actually an anti-Christian polemic. That no, we don't believe in a son of God. We don't rely on a son of God. That we rely on God. We're Jewish. We're not Christian. And Birnbaum was very upset about this. And this was part of the debate and part of the controversy. And this idea that referencing Christianity, even to disagree or discard that view was something that was considered kind of odd or upsetting to some people. And as we said, some people criticized it as well because it didn't have weekday davening. And I think one of the most strident criticisms, though, is one we didn't talk about before, which is this one in source number 5, Rabbi Simcha Elberg in this Hebrew journal Hapardes. So who was Rabbi Simcha Elberg? He was a Polish rabbi and Holocaust survivor. He was one of those who went through the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai during the Holocaust and then came to New York in 1947. He apparently gave the Hechsher to Coca-Cola for a while. And he is affiliated with the Agudas Rabbanim. This is the same group that we talked about, right-wing Orthodox group, the ones that burnt Mordechai Kaplan Sitter, as we talked about at the very beginning. And he is upset with the RCA's Sitter. And let's read over here in source number 5 what he says. He says, Hamila Sidur, Mikudeshes Haisa Eitzel Amenu Bechol HaTekuvos Vazmanim. The word Siddur is sacred for our people in all periods and times. HaSiddur Hu Bitur Shemekuro BeKodesh HaKadashim, VeHaSiddur HaKadash Asor Lo Lito Es HaShem Siddur. That the Siddur is an expression that's the Holy of Holies. The new Siddur cannot take the name Siddur. Why? Mimneishim Uvad Shu Male Ugedush Boros Aminos. It's full of, packed with foolishness and heresy. Yeshon bom gam shuros maleo shel nivol peh. There are four lines of foul language. Kafisha hukba al yedei agudas rabbanim, as the agudas rabbanim already established. Akasha limso sham amud echad shemidaber balashon hasiddur. It's hard to find a single page that speaks in the language of the siddur. Basafa nimlatza umiyupa lo osim siddur. With grandiloquent and embellished language, one does not make a sitter. So there's a lot to unpack this a little bit. There's a lot of things going on in this critique. I think, first of all, I think it's fair to say that there's nothing I would consider to be inappropriate language or foul language or nibble path in the RCA sitter. It's a sitter, and it's a translation of the sitter, even if it's not super literal. I think the last line in particular is going to this issue of it being not literal enough, saying the language is kind of too fancy, kind of too ornate. It's not the right language for a sitter. But I think even more than that, this idea of it's sitter hachadash, this is a new sitter. And to Rabbi Elberg, and to maybe many in a more right-wing Orthodox community, the idea of having a new sitter is not good. The sitter is supposed to be traditional. The sitter is the book that's always been with us. It's the book that's been with us for generations and thousands of years, and it's the book we open when we dive into Hashem. It's the words are comforting, the words are familiar. And this idea of calling a sitter new and making it something different than it was is very upsetting to some people in the Orthodox community at this time. And maybe also this idea that, like, we're responding to the other denominations because they made their sitter, they changed things. This is kind of like, we're not changing the words, maybe, but we're changing the format, we're changing the style. And to them, they're saying, like, this is not how a sitter is supposed to be. A sitter is supposed to be perfectly traditional. It's not supposed to change. In fact, there was one thing that actually Birnbaum mentions in his critique in Hadoar, was there was actually an ad campaign for the RCA sitter, and it showed a bunch of people burying Shemos, including old Sidurim. And then it was juxtaposed to a picture of the new RCA 1960 sitter as if it was replacing these traditional books, as if it's like, look, now we're in America. Now we speak English. Now we have a new sitter. And again, like you can sort of, even if you disagree, you can sort of understand why people were upset by the RCA's push here to make a new sitter. And the Agudas Harabbanim actually even actually ended up making an isur against the sitter. They said you shouldn't use this sitter. Obviously, they didn't burn it like they did to Mordechai Kaplan's sitter, but they were very upset with the RCA sitter. And this may have also contributed to its lack of adoption. In addition to the fact that, as I said, Birnbaum was first and Birnbaum kind of spread, the RCA sitter, with all their marketing and all their idea that, like, we're going to make this fancy, we're going to make this new, we're going to make this American, just didn't really sit well with certain members of the Orthodox community, and it didn't really go over as well as it could have, and it just was not, even in it was certainly used, I'm not going to say it wasn't used, but it was certainly not used as much, I think, as the RCA would have hoped. It certainly didn't become a standard sitter. And in fact, just 1 year later, after it's published in 1961, given all the criticism, the RCA revises it. One thing they did is they actually removed Rabbi Soloveitchik's name from the beginning of the sitter. We don't know completely why Rabbi Soloveitchik decided his name should be removed. I'm sure he was unhappy about the controversy. Maybe he didn't want to make it seem like he had personally approved every aspect of the translation. Indeed, they did change the translation. They didn't take out some of the translations of Israel Zangwill, some of those poetic ones that we talked about a couple of classes ago, but they did change, for example, significantly in Brich Shemay, Bar Elohim was changed from Son of God to created beings. So, you know, very clearly in response to the critiques. But I think there's, to a certain extent, that the RCA's attempt to stake out a position for their congregations didn't really succeed. I mean, maybe this has to do partially with the fact that, as I said, people don't want a new sitter. People want, in Orthodox congregations, want a traditional sitter, even if they want. Or maybe that you know, when we talk about having a standardized sitter, it tends to work well in a shul, maybe, where everyone is coming in and they're all just going to take a sitter from the shelf, sit down in their seats, just follow page by page with whatever, you know, is called out, stand and sit whenever they're told to and stuff like that. But if you're davening, and if you're familiar with the liturgy, if you're familiar with the davening, you're going to want to daven from something that maybe is more comforting to you, maybe something you've used for a long time, and not necessarily something new. You want a sitter that's going to make you feel the most engaged. And again, I don't know exactly. I think there were congregations, certainly Orthodox congregations, where the RCA sitter would have been helpful and would have been useful, but it just didn't sort of develop a bad rap because I think of these issues as we've discussed. But I would say, to the extent that we can talk about the adoption of the sitter, I would say that RCA loses round one, and Birnbaum overall wins round one. So we're also going to have round two and round three, and we're going to see what happened. But let me just look briefly at the chat. So Susanna says in the 1970s, Lincoln Square Synagogue used it to sell a pool. So yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So I think I think the Jewish Center used it as well, and other congregations, and certainly it was used. Same font as Silverman. That could be. I have to look back at Silverman. Maybe, it was printed by Berman House. RCA was originally contracted with Hebrew Publishing Company, then they switched to Berman House. It's possible that Silverman was also printed by Berman House. I'd have to go back and look. Chaim says, could the issue of poetic and literal translations relate to whether translation was intended for people who would be praying in English or those who want to know the meaning of the Hebrew prayers? Yes, I think so. And I talked about this in my third class, that it seems like the more poetic translations, the more pretty, beautified translations were in some sense designed for people, to at least give people the option of davening in English. And a translation like Art Scroll is going to be much more for people who are davening in Hebrew and want to just look here and there for the meaning of a word. So you want to try to keep it as literal as possible, even when it was, as we've talked about in the past, even want to match the syntax or the word order, so that it can facilitate the Hebrew davening. The format of the RCA Sitter is closest to that of the Silverman Sitter. Shabbos and Yom Tov Amida, both immediately after Kriya Shema, fell by Halal. Interesting. Okay, yeah, so maybe they're from the same same publisher. Did the RCA ever issue a siddur with weekday davening? Well, yes, Judy, we are going to talk about that because the next two versions of the RCA siddur do include weekday davening. And with that, we will move on. Let's move on for now to the second edition. Yes.
Sorry, I did put my hand up. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, you know, I didn't see it. Yeah.
Irie, so don't worry. I'm from England, and I'm very sad I missed your previous three, but I heard them recorded. The fact is that this is not poetic, these poetic things. If you look at poetry in England at that time, he's obviously just showing off. If you read Robert Browning, I mean, he's much more modern. If you're getting to 1916-17, I'm just wondering, because I don't know about American Jewish politics, did Rabbi Solapool, did he officiate at Sherit Yisrael as a Sephardi rabbi? I'm just wondering whether, because that was a very famous synagogue, and I'm just wondering whether that might have had something to do with it, because, you know, the Birnbaum is a, frankly, whatever the politics, a much better, you know, translation, and I am a translator. But the idea that Zangwill, who was one of the most popular novelists in the UK at the time, you know, I'm not saying he wasn't clever, but I don't think it's poetic. You know, I think there's more to it. And it's probably that as I think you said, or one of the other originally English people that's on the program said, that most Jews in the United Synagogue wouldn't understand Hebrew in England, unlike in America, where you're much more knowledgeable. So right. Please don't say it's poetic, because it isn't. It's just fancy rubbish that most poetry was amazing at that. So I've got George Eliot writing novels in her marvellous English. And then later you've got people, I don't like him, but T.S. Eliot in your country, you know, at this time. The English is not, just because it's fanciful doesn't mean that it's poetic or English. Sorry. Okay. But I just
thought, all right. I appreciate that comment, actually. I think that's very fair. I'm not a poet. I don't have a great sense always for what constitutes good poetry and what doesn't, but I will admit that it does strike me as well as more fanciful than poetic. Yes, I would agree with that. I'm just not as familiar with the poetry of the time. But yes, point well taken. But I do think part of the idea was to make it lofty and fanciful. I do think that was an important point of why they were doing it. So let's talk about what happened next. So first RCA Siddur in 1960, 1961 didn't do as well as the RCA had hoped. Then in the mid 1980s, they decided to make a new edition. I don't know all the politics behind this of what happened, but I do know that they chose the Art Scroll Siddur. And we see this here in source number 6. And I have the picture here on the side on the right. You've probably seen this. I mean, this is the siddur that is used in the shul that I daven at for the most part, the Rabbinical Council of America edition of the Art Scroll Siddur. And so what the RCA says in the introduction here is, today a new generation of American-born Orthodox Jews has different needs in a siddur. A growing number attend services every day and therefore require a siddur that does not limit to Sabbaths and festivals. Right, so we're talking about having the weekday davening. While insisting on the traditional Hebrew text, many of today's worshippers want a more literal translation as well as words of commentary and inspirational direction. There's no commentary in the original De Solo Pool Siddur. The siddur differs from others in the Art School series in several ways. So here it explains what changed. The text of the prayer for the welfare of the state reflects the fact that this siddur was intended for Jews who reside in democratic countries where they enjoy constitutionally guaranteed political equality and civil rights and are not ruled by despots. So you have the prayer for the United States of America. Moreover, it recognizes the importance of the state of Israel within contemporary Jewish history. Included, therefore, are the prayer for the welfare of the state of Israel and memorial prayers for the fallen members of the Israel Defense Forces. So in 1983, when Art Scroll, or 1984,
Rabbi,
maybe...
Rabbi. The first edition that also came, there was not Tfilah Lishon Mandina.
I know. I'm about to say that. Yeah. Right. So when Art
Scroll first... Why don't we wait till interruptions till the end of the class, if I may ask? Keep all comments till the end. Put them in the chat box. We'll get to everything in the end. You can unmute yourself. But let's finish.
Thank you. Yeah. Sounds good. I think I'm probably going to use most of the time. So let me just... I'll just wait till the end at this point for additional comments. So in 1984, I believe, when the Art Scroll originally published its siddur, we've talked a little bit about the Art Scroll Siddur and what was so good about it, how the layout was good, the translation is very literal, very easy to follow, but they do not include the tefillah for the state of Israel. Unlike, we pointed out, Dr. Birnbaum in 1949, he did include an Art Scroll coming from a different position in the Haredi community, coming mostly from the Haredi community, where the state of Israel was not recognized in the same way. They do not include the Tefillah L'Shalom Medina. So the main change they're making in this RCA edition is they're including that tefillah. That's the biggest change. Also, they have the Prayer for America. And also, the only other thing, as far as I know, that they changed in the RCA edition from the regular Art School Siddur is they include a different introduction from Rabbi Saul Berman, an important teacher, rabbi. I believe he was the rabbi at Lincoln Square Synagogue for a while, and he taught at Stern College for many years. Maybe he still teaches there. I'm actually not sure. But he also wrote the introduction. But other than that, this is basically the Art School Siddur. It's the same. And if you look in source number 7, if source number 6 is the RCA's introduction to the Siddur, source number 7 is Art School's introduction to the RCA Siddur. The Art School editor is Rabbi Nassim Sherman, Rabbi Meir Zlotowitz, and they kind of point out this, why the RCA came on board. They say, since the Art School series came into existence, more requests have come for an Art School Siddur than for any other work. From rabbis and laymen, teachers and students, men and women, scholars and strivers for knowledge came an insistence that the times demand a complete yet functional siddur with clear and accurate laws and instructions. The Rabbinical Council of America, too, has recognized this need, and we are gratified it has selected the Art School Siddur in this special edition for its congregational use. And it features, and it goes on to talk about things it features, but it's the same things that the Art School Siddur generally features, a very literal translation, clear layout, commentary, all those things. So what's going on here is that this really says a lot about how the first thing I think it says is how Art School has really created a very good product. It's very clear, it's very easy to use, it's got a literal translation. It is definitely what people are looking for, a more yeshiva educated laity at the time who's interested in davening in Hebrew, who wants a literal translation, who wants a commentary. So it really fills that need, and the RCA recognizes that, and that's why they adopt the Art School Siddur. I mean, I think it also speaks to an orthodoxy that's moving to the right, that Haredi Judaism is ascendant, and more liberal approaches are less so at this time period. For certainly in the 70s and 80s, this is something that does occur. So this is sort of the compromise the RCA makes. They want to include, they want to make sure that they recognize the state of Israel. They have a beautiful introduction from Rabbi Saul Berman. I just put a little bit here in source number 8. I'm not going to read it, but I will say I just actually read it for the first time only like last week, and I was preparing for this class, and I'm like, wow, this is really beautiful. Because he's trying to understand in a very deep way, like, what are we doing when we daven? Like what gives us the right to daven? What gives us the right to speak to God? What are we asking for? And what do we hope is going to happen? And he quotes Rabbi Soloveitchik at the beginning. So that's also very, very clear distinction between this and like Art School. Art School generally would not be quoting the Rav in their Siddur. And then he goes back to Tanakh, which is also, I think, something that probably Art School would not do, this sort of pshat analysis of what comes out of Tanakh. And he picks three figures from Tanakh who daven, and shows based on what they say what prayer might be doing. And he says there are three prayers that begin with the word Vayigash, that someone approached. One of them is Avraham when he prays for Sodom. One of them is Yehuda when he prays on behalf of his brother Binyamin when he's captured by when Yosef wants to make Binyamin a slave before he reveals himself to his brothers. And he also talks about the prayer of Eliyahu at Har HaCarmel when he is disputing the prophets of the Baal. And he says, if you look at those three tefillot, they're all different. They're all asking for something entirely different. Avraham is praying for others. He's demanding justice. Yehuda is praying for himself and his family and demanding mercy. And Eliyahu is, in a sense, praying for God himself. He's praying for God to reveal himself and to show himself to everyone. And what Rabbi Berman concludes is that these are all valid modes of prayer and all important modes of prayer. And actually, these three models can help us as we daven, because we can understand that prayer can indeed do many things and has many reasons and many ways to do it. Someone pointed out to me he should have made mention Chana's prayer as well, when Chana prayers for a child in the Mishkan. But I think he was very interested in prayers that use the word Vayigash in this particular essay. So this is the second RCA. This is the second RCA Siddur. And this became a very, very important Siddur, to the extent, actually, I would say, there became a standard Siddur in modern Orthodox synagogues. It was actually this Art School edition of the RCA sitter that became the standard one, in a way I think that the 1960 De Sola Pool edition didn't quite do. But I will say that this is not the end, because there is a third round. So if Art Scroll wins round two, there is round three, and we're going to see what happened in round three. So in 2009, so we're talking now a good 15 years ago, the RCA puts up an announcement on its website for the 75th anniversary, that for its 75th anniversary in 2010, it's going to be releasing a new edition of the sitter. And I have over here the source number 9, the ad. How did I find this ad? It's through a miracle called the Wayback Machine, where you can go to the internet and find old copies of web pages that used to exist but no longer exist. So this is from the Wayback Machine about the newest RCA sitter is nearing completion. It's going to enhance the prayer experience for decades to come. You can see a number of different features: simplified English translation, rewritten commentary, introductory essays, sensitivity throughout to women's prayer experience, including, it says, Zevet Habat, Birkas HaGomel, Kaddish for women saying Kaddish, Zimun for women, and yeah, there's a lot of, and it's even going to have a regularly updated multimedia website with supplementary prayers, commentary, MP3 recordings of Shir and Tfila, Nusach, Bali Tfila. It sounds amazing, honestly. And as you can see, just by looking at the picture, this looks like an Art Scroll sitter. It looks like something published by Art Scroll Masorah Publications, and indeed that's the plan. The sitter will be designed and produced with the meticulous attention to beauty and detail for which Art Scroll Masorah is justly renowned, and this is going to be published by the Rabbinical Council of America. It's going to be ready by 2010. So as far as I can tell, this advertisement stayed up on the RCA's website until 2013, after which it quietly came down. And then in 2016, I found a user comment on the Jewish Stack Exchange site, MiYodea. And the comment reads as follows. The new RCA sitter has not been released. This is in 2016. The new RCA sitter has not been released yet, even though they announced on their website it's publishing 5 years ago. I contacted the RCA and they didn't respond. So clearly something was going on. The RCA sitter was not published in a timely fashion. And as you see in source number 10, eventually the RCA did publish the sitter, but it was in 2018. So 8 years after it was initially planned, they published it in October of 2018. And one thing that's very significant that you'll note is this is no longer an Art Scroll published sitter. This is a sitter published by Koren Publishers. And here I have a copy of it as well at home. So what happened? I don't know all the specifics. Presumably there was some kind of dispute between Art Scroll and the RCA, and at least that is public, that one of the editors, he wrote actually an article in Chakira, and he says that he basically just says that Art Scroll dropped them. I don't know completely why Art Scroll dropped them, but it does seem to have something to do with the Hashkafa, as we're going to explore for the remainder of the sitter. But I will note, before we delve into the sitter, a few things about it. It is black and gold, just like the other two editions of the RCA sitter, so it's keeping that. And it would have been ready in 2010, which was only 1 year after the Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's translation commentary of the sitter was published by Koren. That was published in 2009. So I wonder if these two sitters had been published contemporaneously, basically, if they each would have had a fighting chance. And I think, unfortunately, because these RCA sitter was not published until 2018, that when shuls were replacing their sidurim, modern Orthodox shuls were replacing their Art Scroll sidurim, they were opting for the Koren Rabbi Sachs sitter instead, because this new RCA sitter was not yet available. And by the time the RCA sitter was available in 2018, a lot of shuls had switched to the Koren or were switching to the Koren, and therefore there wasn't as much impetus to get the sitter Avodas Halev. I'll be curious, you can write in the chat if you've seen the sitter used in shul. I've seen it in one place, actually, the Young Israel of Century City in Los Angeles. I was there davening once during the week a couple years ago, and they had a whole shelf full of them. It seems like they specifically went out and purchased that to be the shul sitter, but generally I have not seen it used so much. So unfortunately, I think we have to say overall that the RCA seems to be losing round three as well, this time to the Koran sitter. But I do want to talk about this sitter because I really think it's really interesting. And actually, after it was released in 2019, I wrote this review in the Lair House of the sitter. And I don't know why, but it's one of the most viewed articles at Lair House. Since it really struck a chord, people seem really interested in this sitter for some reason, even though people don't actually seem to be using it in shul. But the whole idea of it, I guess, struck people as very interesting. And we're going to try to talk about some of the features of it that make it, I think people make it very interesting. So I have over here just a basic page from it. You can see it's got the Hebrew, it's got the English. Now note that the Hebrew is on the right and the English is on the left, which is not what the Koran usually does for this Siddurim. They usually have it flipped. The font, I think, is very clear. It's similar to the Art Scroll font in many ways. I think, honestly, in personal opinion, a little easier to read than the font in the Koran Sack Sitter, but people may differ on that. It has commentary on the bottom. You see the psukim are quoted. You can see the quote, where the pasuk is from, on the side of the page, easier than finding it in a footnote, which is where Art Scroll puts it. It's got clear directions. So you know, it's a very user-friendly, easy-to-use sitter. So that's one very nice feature of it. The translation is actually an updated translation version of Rabbi Dr. David Disolopoul's translation. They didn't use the Art Scroll translation, and they didn't make one wholly from scratch, but they did make Disolopoul's translation much more modern and much more in line with what translations sound like in contemporary books. Interestingly, just going back to Shir number 3 for 1 second, they do retain actually a lot of Israel Zangwill's and Nina Solomon's translations still for the Hoshanos, which is interesting that they kept those around. Those very, I won't call them poetic, I guess, those very fanciful translations in the original RCA Siddur and in the original Adler Machzer. And I think what I'm going to highlight now, just for the remaining 7 or 8 minutes or so, is what is unique about the Siddur, though, in terms of what does it do differently than other Siddurim? And I'll give you a few examples. So in source number 11 over here, this is right before you make the bracha on the lulav, at halal, before you say halal. And the RCA does not include the l'shem yichud. There's all these prayers you say l'shem yichud, to unify the name of God. It's a very Kabbalistic idea. And we have one before Sfiras Omer that a lot of people say. We have them before tefillin, before lulav, before all sorts of different mitzvos, and the RCA doesn't include any of them on the page. And this is what they say in source number 11. Traditionally, Ashkenazi Jews did not recite prayers prior to the performance of mitzvot. One simply recited the bracha and then performed the mitzvah. In the 18th century, under Hasidic influence, some Siddurim started to include various statements, including the Shem Yichud, to be recited before performing selected, but not all mitzvot that are fulfilled during prayer. Yecheskel Landau, the noted Yehuda, and others, including at least one Hasidic one, opposed the recital of the Shem Yichud by the masses, for they would not understand its highly esoteric nature. Others, however, favored its recital. The matter has remained in dispute. In this sitter, we provide the text for those whose custom is to recite it. See page 1336. So what do? They take all those Shem Yichuds, which in Art Scroll and pretty much, honestly, almost every other sitter, and they move it all to the back. And that's something different. I haven't seen that before. Another interesting thing. Source number 12, Nachem. So in Mincha, on Tisha B'Av, we say a special bracha in Bona Yerushalayim. We change it. We change it to reflect the seriousness of Tisha B'Av, and we talk about Hashem having mercy on us, and we have a whole long paragraph there about how Jerusalem is destroyed, and it's bereft, and there's no one living there. And I think to many contemporary readers, this is bothersome, because Yerushalayim of today is not Yerushalayim of the year 135 after the Bar Kokhba revolt or wherever. You know, Yerushalayim is very built up. And is a modern city, and also an old city, but there are lots of people living there. So here's the commentary that the RCA provides on the words Ha'avelami Blibana, that Jerusalem is bereft of her children. Given the current state of Jerusalem, there is ongoing debate among contemporary authorities regarding the recital of Nachem. One solution was proposed by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who omitted this sentence on the grounds that in prayer we should strive for truthfulness. And thus, while these words were certainly accurate in the past, this is no longer the case. So, and I haven't seen this in other Siddurim, where they actually suggest that there is a halachic basis not to recite all of Nachem today because of the state of Jerusalem. Source number 13, here's something else very interesting. This is the piyut kakeli, which we say before Musaf on a Yom Tov, on a weekday. And it talks about, first of all, the history of where this piyut, it says it first appeared in Siddur Shar Shemayim with the commentary of the Shlal in 1717. So it gives you a little history. So there's an academic aspect of the Siddur. The commentary will often say where tefillah originally come from. The art school will do this too, but in a less academic way. But I think really fascinating is they actually change the words in the RCA Siddur of Kakeli. We're familiar with it. V'toda, v'la'ola, mincha, v'chatas. It's like a list of all the karbanot, beginning with karban toda. And it says, it changes it to v'tora, la'ola. And it translates it as, may our recital of the Torah passages regarding the burnt offering, the meal offering, etc., be like we offered it. That's the way it translates the whole paragraph there. So toda is changed to Torah. And they explain in the commentary here that the piyut's refrain, as it has reached us, is probably corrupt. A list of sacrifices unconnected to the body of the piyut would be odd, and it also says the list follows the Parsuk in Vayikra, which talks about the law for the burnt offering, the meal offering, and it says, Vizos HaTorah LaOla. This is the order of the sacrifice beginning with the Ola, and not the word Toda. Right? It begins with the Rabbanit, right. And it, here in the second column, it says, we may therefore surmise the refrain originally began Vitora la Ola, and which matches the Pasuk, and because of the similarity of the Dalet and Resh, Vav was added to la Ola to graph the Torah to the list, so it was a flipping of the Dalet and the Resh. But anyway, without getting very deep into this, and they quote Professor Bernard Septimus, an important scholar, for this observation, so they actually changed the word of the piyut. From the way it's generally said in Shul, based on their reconstruction of the fact that it should be Vitora La'ola and not Vitora La'ola, also very interesting. Source number 14, I just gave you some selections here of some things I found interesting when going through the Siddur. This is the custom of Kaparos, of waving the chicken on Erev Yom Kippur. It says over here, the custom of Kaparot can be fulfilled by using either live fowl or money as a substitute. Those who use live fowl should be very careful to ensure that A, the fowl is treated before, during and after the ceremony with full consideration of the prohibition against inflicting pain or discomfort on the animal life, as well as B, sensitivity to all local health and safety ordinances relating to livestock. For these and other reasons, many people prefer to observe kaparot by using coins or bills to be given afterward to a worthy charity. Now, indeed, it's true that I think for many, many years, many people have used money instead of a chicken for kaparos, but I think it's interesting that it notes over here this importance of the ethical aspect of this, that we have to be careful about Tsar Balei Chaim. We have to be sensitive to health regulations and the health department and stuff like that. So here again, a kind of a different focus than you might see in earlier Siddurim. The commentary, like Art School's commentary in general, is an anthology of various ideas, but notably they have women and men writing these ideas. It's not all just men. It's also a more diverse range of sources. There are also a lot of essays in the back of the Siddur, kind of like in the Hertz Chumash where we started, that he has all these essays, longer essays in the back. So they try to do the same thing in the RCA Siddur. Some of those essays are indeed very interesting. I'll point out here in source number 15, just an example of how the Siddur also makes some small changes related to issues about women's tefillah. And for one thing, actually, I didn't put on the source sheet, they acknowledge that women can say Kaddish, just like men can. Although they note that there's debate about what the parameters of that are. Maybe they should say it quietly. Maybe a man should be saying it with them. But they do over here in source number 15 include the zimun for women. So, they have over here, they started chavero tayin nevarech or chavero sayin nevarech. And then the zimun continues from there. And they over here in the comment, they explain in this box what's going on here. It talks about three or more males reciting a zimun. But then the second paragraph, it says, when three women and fewer than three men are at a meal, the women may, according to Tosfot, or must, according to the Rush, make a zimun. The men present should respond to the women's zimun, and they quote Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. The text used for the women's zimun is below the line. So you overhear what I overhear. That's very interesting. There's not too many other. Art School, for example, does not include this text for the women's zimun. It is in the Siddur called the Nehalel Siddur, which is this, maybe you've seen that, it has pictures. Very large pictures throughout the Siddur, and they do include the women's Zimun there, but the RCA follows the lead and does include that, which is not something that was included in the Art School and certainly not included in the Art School RCA edition. So I think what I'm trying to show by giving you these examples from this new RCA Siddur is I think in the end, the even if this RCA sitter has not been so successful at getting into shuls because of these timing issues we discussed, but the RCA has staked out a modern Orthodox approach to the sitter, one that balances tradition and modernity. They're not, you know, as we've seen there, they obviously, this is the traditional sitter, and this is a sitter that's used by Orthodox congregations, and but they do accept in some places modern scholarship. They do allow for some more participation by women, and they're trying to draw that balance, and I think in a very quintessentially modern Orthodox way, between tradition and modernity. The only question then is this too late? Is this going to destined to become another forgotten synagogue work if it even ever is remembered in the first place? I guess time will tell. But in any event, it's been quite a journey that we've had together over these last five classes, from the Adler Machzor to the Hertz Chumash to the Birnbaum Siddur and Machzor to Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan's Living Torah, and to now to the RCA's three attempts to create a standardized sitter. And I think what's interesting about all the books we've talked about is that they're not doing anything, in some sense, they're not doing anything new. The words of the Chumash, the words of the sitter are timeless. The question is how we interpret it, how we adapt it to modern sensibilities. And we've seen sort of five different ways of dealing with these issues of balancing tradition and modernity. And I think it tells a story about the Orthodox community and the 20th century and how things have shifted. And as we begin now, and we've already begun for a while, actually, but as we continue through the 21st century, I'm certainly very excited to see what the future holds in terms of how we continue to adapt the synagogue books to match what's going on in our congregations. And with that, I will end the formal presentation, and I will address the questions in the chat first. And then if there's still time, I will give you all a chance to say something as well. Okay.
I'll just say thank you while you address the things in this sitter and the chat box. And of course, you realize that the last part of the share explains why it wasn't published by Artscroll, but it was published by Corinth.
Yes. Us, right. I should have just closed that loop, but yes. All these things make it very clear, I think, why Artscroll did not publish this.
Yes.
Saul says, are you going to discuss the Corinth sitter? Not really. I mean, just to note that Corin did publish a popular sitter with Rabbi Sachs's translation and commentary that is widely being used now in modern Orthodox synagogues. David Skora says, from a perspective many years removed, I recall that the solo pool sitter was also caught up in the bitter opposition to the popular 50s to 70s traditional approach by many RCA connected congregations. That's interesting. I don't know as much about that, but that sounds interesting. I could imagine, though, for sure that among Orthodox congregations, there's going to be debate about whether we're looking to do something new or we're looking to do something more traditional. Because again, they are responding to a certain extent to the conservative movement on their left. And they're saying, you know, we need to stake ourselves out as Orthodox and traditional. Chaim says, Ad refers to matching pagination of the original RCA sitter. Wasn't that the Sola Pool sitter while they seem to be referring to Artscroll? Yes, Chaim, I agree with you. I think they mean the Artscroll one. I don't think they mean the original De Solo Pool. That would be my guess. Asher Reimer says, Young Israel of Jamaica Estates and Queens uses the new RCA extensively. That's great. Okay. Chaim says, I have a Koran sitter with Rabbi Sachs's translation published about 12 years ago that alleges itself to be the RCA sitter. That's very interesting. I don't know about that. I'd be curious to see more of the sitter. I'm not aware of that. Ted says, while it is nice to have the citation on the side, I'm frustrated by Corin citing only the book and chapter, not the specific verses. Doesn't this one, though, cite the specific verses? I think it did. I think it does. All right. Rosenberg Siddur for Tisha B'Av has an alternate Nachem. Yeah, sure. Okay, right. So that's the older British Tisha B'Av service. That's okay. I have to look back at that. That has the alternate Nachem as well. Okay. All right. Let me stop sharing, actually, because I should have done that. Okay. And then if we have a few more minutes, if anyone else wants to say anything else, I guess we could do that.
I have two questions.
Sure.
First of all, I bought the new RCA sitter. I find the print is very disturbing. It, the, when because the pay is not worth, the contract is not good, especially if you compare it to the Queen's. And I was really disappointed when I saw that.
Oh, okay. All right.
The other thing, there's one other big difference in the text, in the actual Hebrew text, that maybe it's just another version and I'm not aware of that, but in the Yiddish methods, a lot of the words seem to be different than the words that I'm accustomed to.
Yes, yes, Marty. Yeah, so Yiddish Nefesh, there are different texts. I don't know all the background behind that, but it does seem like the original was probably changed at one point, and the one that's in most of the Siddurim is the altered version. And I think Koren maybe puts back some of the original version of Yiddish Nefesh, which possibly is a little more controversial.
Also harder to sing.
Yeah, it's definitely harder to sing.
The active version doesn't work as well with the term.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah. I see Bob is raising his hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, like, you talked at the beginning about the Union Prayer Book of the Reform Movement that was opening from the left and left out the second paragraph after the Shema and the Mechaye Hamitin, the most recent version of the Reform Prayer Book, first of all, it opens from the right. It has a lot more Hebrew. It offers Mechaye Hamitin as an option. And the Mahzor, which was issued in, I think, 2016, also offers the second paragraph after the Shema as an option. So a lot of the things that the Reform Movement did in its early days, I mean, it's still, you know, very different from an Orthodox Siddur, but it has changed a lot of those early omissions and changes.
Yeah, Bob, thank you. That's a very good point. The Reform Movement has moved very much more toward traditional liturgy, and in general, like the... You go to a Reform synagogue apparently in like the 19th century. It was a very, very different experience. They were trying to ban people wearing yarmulkes. You're not allowed to wear a tallis. Yeah. The focus is basically making it more like, and they know the centerpiece is going to be the sermon. They're trying to make it more almost like I hesitate to say it, but it's more almost like a Protestant in a way service.
I think that's unfair.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, for sure, they move much more in a traditional direction in the center and in the service in many ways.
I mean, in our congregation, and the service is probably about 70% Hebrew. Everybody's wearing a kippah, including the women, and many people are wearing a talit as well.
So. Right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that.
A question. I see. I think, I didn't mean to interrupt, but if you're finished, Usher, Bob, you want to?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Usher, Vakasha.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask, for things like translations of Tehillim and Davening, did the RCA do it from start, or did they take somebody else's translation?
Oh, yeah, so for Tehillim, yes, that's right. They did, they took it from Koren, I believe. Koren had a new translation of Tehillim. I'm blanking right now exactly on the specifics. I know it's in my article, actually. I wrote about that. And I know they took also the commentary of Rabbi Amos Chacham from the Dat Mikra series, and they included that as a commentary to Tehillim, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for a wonderful share.
Okay, if, that's it. We want to thank you, Rabbi Yosef. A pleasure, very fascinating, interesting, and I know you're busy, but we do look forward to having you again at some time in the future. And I did post, we're having a new series, Aviyat Tabori, who just recently wrote a book published by Koren about the halakhic issue in the state of Israel before the war. The book came out before the war. He's been going to give me a series of talks. I did mention coincidentally, whatever, but he was our first year post-COVID on Zoom. He gave like March 20th on Bikur Cholim 2020. So he's spoken a few times since, but anyways, he's starting a five-part series on interesting issues about, I think it's the title, from judicial reform to the war in Gaza. So that's beginning this Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And Mark Shapiro is not giving his class this week. He's in Japan. So it's he's off this week. And Nadi Helfgott is in Israel, is not giving his class this week. And Shuli Mishkin is also not giving her class this week. So we got to make sure to come to the other classes. Tomorrow, Rabbi Shulman on Kohelet. Thursday, Parsha Shir, Shana Kravitz is giving Parsha Shir this week. And of course, my Shir on the Siddur on Friday morning. Okay, everybody, any last comments? But thank you very much. I do have the RCA Siddur at home, and I did use it for a while, but it's like, it is interesting. And, you know, but it like you say, it took too long to get it up. There it is.
When I was diving at home during COVID, I used it every day. Mm-hmm.
Right. Wow. It's a little big, so like you don't want to schlep it to shul because it's bigger than the Koran. It's a little heavier than the Koran Siddur. But anyways, although it is interesting, of the 17 articles in the back, for some reason only one is by a woman, and I don't know.
Yeah, I noted that in my article as well. I think that does seem to be an oversight that probably they should have paid more.
Yeah, they probably didn't really notice it. Guys, sometimes I always ask people to speak, you know, really. In the end, you look at it, they're, oh my God, 16 men and one woman, but no men. Right. But otherwise, it is a woman-friendly sitter, and except, I mean, 16 is one is better than 17 to nothing. But anyways, okay, 17 to nothing sounds like a football score, but the football season is over, so we can't talk football anymore. Even if it goes into overtime, there comes a time when it comes to an end. Okay, sorry about that, folks. Okay, too bad. The Chiefs won. What can you do? All right. Okay, but everybody be well. We look forward to learning with you soon, and all the best. Okay, thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes.